HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by employment law expert Trina Sugru of A&L Goodbody. Trina, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm not too bad, Declan. Nice to meet you virtually. And not too bad.
Brilliant. And nice to meet you too. Trina, I was delighted to get you onto the podcast because I want to talk to you about a few legal aspects of that have been thrust upon us nearly by COVID-19. Totally appreciate we're not going to spend, you know, lots and lots of time on any one of them, but it'd be very interesting to just get those top level legal points or legal points of interest on any of them. First things first, much like myself and yourself, as we talked to each other across Zoom, lots of people working from home at the moment. It's opened a bit of a legal, I don't want to say minefield, but I would say people just aren't used to having all of their staff or loads of their staff working from home for lots and lots of time. What are the sort of the key legal things now people should be our companies should be looking out for?
Absolutely, Declan. I think when this all started in March, we all thought this was just going to be temporary. And as the months have gone on, we're now realising, employers and employees, that working from home is something that's here to stay at the moment and certainly into the future. So interestingly, there has been a public consultation. The government, the Department of Business, has had a public consultation during the summer about producing guidance and strategy in relation to remote working. And we're expecting that by the end of the year. So that should be interesting. In the meantime, a lot of employers are now looking at home working policies and rolling out home working policies as home working has become more of a permanent feature. And interestingly, the Health and Safety Authority just very recently published a guidance booklet on the health and safety aspects of working from home, which are very important and is something that's very new to a lot of employers. They're used to being able to deal with health and safety in the office, and that's under their control. And now their obligations extend to home working, where they don't have the same level of control over that. And so this guidance is really helpful in dealing with that and how employers can conduct things like risk assessments and look at workstations and what the workstation in the home environment should look like and consist of. It also interestingly addresses the area of work-related stress and potential isolation arising from home working. So it's really good guidance. Also, the Data Protection Commission has guidance on protecting data while people are working from home, which is really important. Again, the employer doesn't have the same control over the situation, the same visibility on the situation. And so it's still, though, important to protect data. And so there is guidance available from the Data Protection Commission. And these are all factors that employers are dealing with and dealing with in terms of a home working policy. And in addition to communication and management of employees who are working from home full time.
And I'm really glad now, Trina, I set us up by saying that we would only be skimming the surface on some of these things, because I mean, anything you've mentioned there, we could probably spend the next hour easily talking
Absolutely.
About. I am going to pick one though. In terms of risk assessment, I think in my experience, what's happened is employees are now being told to work from home. Previously, they'd request to work from home. Has that changed the onus of responsibility from the employee to the employer? And if so, you know, what are the basic things the employer needs to worry about in terms of risk assessment?
It doesn't necessarily change the onus. Both employer and employee have always had responsibility under the Safety, Health and Welfare at Work Act in terms of the health and safety in the work environment. This guidance is very instructive in terms of conducting the risk assessment, and the appendix to the guidance contains that home working risk assessment or a checklist. So, and it does contain kind of a two-step process in terms of conducting the actual risk assessment itself. And so it does obviously allow at the moment that it may not be possible to go into a person's home to conduct a risk assessment. So it could be done perhaps virtually, but it remains to be seen in practice how employers can roll that out And but it's very important that they do take it into account and do are very cognizant of their responsibilities in that regard.
And are you seeing a very practical approach in terms of people you're dealing with? You know, there's the letter of the law and then there's the practicalities of it. It's sort of because it's, you know, something that's hit us from just out of the blue. I presume there's a lot of grey areas at the moment. Typically, is the legal viewpoint practical?
Yeah, it has to be at the moment. And I think in terms of the Health and Safety Authority and any inspections, it is anticipated that the views that will be taken would be quite practical. However, the longer this continues, the more employers really do need to be proactive and comply with their obligations, because it's not the same as a situation we had in the spring summer where we all probably anticipated some level of return to the office by August, September. Now it is more long term and it is more important to roll out these measures and to take responsibility for health and safety.
Obviously, the economy is taking a hit as we speak. There's, unfortunately, there's companies closing down. They're going to short-term working. They're, you know, it's having a negative impact on lots of organizations. If companies are in that unfortunate situation where they need to lay people off or they need to put people on lower hours per week, you know, what are the key considerations for that sort of a situation?
Yeah, it's faced, especially with the moving into level five now, we've seen it again with a lot of businesses having to implement layoffs and short time working. It's important, I suppose, to differentiate between a layoff and a redundancy situation. So a layoff is only ever intended to be temporary. A redundancy is a permanent measure. And sometimes in the media, the terminology can get confused between layoff and redundancy. And it's important to differentiate from the legal perspective between the two. In terms of implementing layoff and short-time working, employers have had to act very quickly depending on the nature of the way things are changing. And so it is important, however, that they do, if there are selection criteria in terms of they need to select certain staff for layoff, that those selection criteria are objective and transparent and fair. In terms of deciding which staff might be placed on layoff or short time. And usually layoff is only temporary, but we have seen this suspension of the right to claim redundancy, which is unusual and always had been there that employees would have the right to claim redundancy after 4 consecutive weeks of layoff. That was postponed and pushed out, and it has been pushed out several times at this stage. At the moment, employees still don't have that right until the 30th of November, and there's a lot of speculation that that might be extended again. So it's really unprecedented that employees who are on layoff for a long period of time don't have that right to claim redundancy. So we'll have to wait and see what happens for the 30th of November and whether that might be pushed out again.
Was the rationale for that, Trina, to save the revenue coffers or the employer's cash flow?
I think both. My understanding is both, that it is to protect both those revenue coffers and the employer's cash flow and the employer's solvency.
Okay. And in terms of those key, criteria for people meeting layoff, obviously people need to act quickly in these circumstances, you know, having someone on the payroll for an extra week, month, whatever it might be, can be the difference in terms of the, you know, the long-term outcome for the organization. The criteria, can they be quite obvious, or, you know, is there a consultancy in terms of the criteria? Do you have to consult with people individually in the build-up to layoffs, or can you say, I don't know, if you're a hotel, you're laying off all of the staff in the restaurant, for example, because that's just not open?
Yeah, it very, very much depends on the circumstances. So if it's a full closure, then it will probably be very obvious the necessity for pretty much all the staff. To be laid off and who has to be laid off and who doesn't. And it'll be quite clear. In other situations, it may not be that clear. And employers always have to have regard to the contract of employment, employment policies, custom and practice with regard to layoffs, and also any agreements with trade unions, if they're in place, if there is a collective agreement or an industry custom and practice, perhaps, that they need to have regard to when it comes to implementing layoffs. So really, it's about looking at all those factors when implementing layoffs to ensure that best practice is followed.
I'm just going to go back, Trina, on myself, just from when we were talking about work from home and work from home policies. When you review organizations' policies in light of what's happening at the moment, typically where are the big things that need to change?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of employers didn't even have home working policies up until now. So it's something new that they're introducing and they're rolling out. And so they wouldn't have been that comprehensive. They may have been just a few paragraphs. And it wasn't, I suppose, that big of an issue because there wasn't this situation where in level five, you're only supposed to be, you're supposed to work from home unless essential. The home working policies that we'll be rolling out now are far more comprehensive in terms of dealing with issues like health and safety, data protection, communication with the employer, when issues need to be reported to the employer, and I suppose performance management as well, and the contract of employment in terms of that continuing to apply, and all the usual processes and procedures in terms of perhaps disciplinary processes, grievance procedures, they all still apply and they're all still available to the employee.
And are you seeing any trends in organizations, Trina, in terms of, you know, different approaches? Is there any commonality there as this emerges in terms of new approaches from different companies?
Yes, well, a huge thing that has occurred, I suppose, over the past few months is that some employees have been working from home from their home country. So working from home abroad, which is novel and brought about now by the pandemic. But there are a lot of considerations there for employers if entering into that type of arrangement. So where employees have gone home to their home country, but are still working away for their employer who's based in Ireland, there may be tax considerations that they have to consider, immigration considerations, and also the employee may, the employment laws in the country where they're working and where they're based may apply. And so that needs to be taken into account. So it's not an arrangement to be entered into lightly, and employers should probably take specific advice on the situation so they know exactly the implications of entering into such an arrangement.
Yeah, that's, I actually was talking to someone quite recently about that exact point, Trina, in terms of if they're working from home, that the home country laws or the Irish laws, like they might be getting a hybrid, the best of the two of them, which obviously could be very complicated and very interesting discussions. Is there anything, if you are not insisting on an employee being at the office, or even the converse where you cannot have them at the office, is there anything you can actually do, or what are your obligations in terms of them actually being in the country?
You would be with it. I mean, an employer would be able to insist that they would stay in the country, especially if there's tax implications and other implications from them working in another country. Originally, their place of work and their contract of employment is probably the office. And so in order to comply with government guidance there, the employee is working from home, but the address the employer would always have had was probably an address in Ireland. And so it is up to the employer to agree to the situation that they might work from abroad.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I presume if there's data flowing to them and from them and they're outside the EU as well, I presume that adds an extra layer of complexity.
Absolutely. Another important factor to consider.
And just while we're talking about data, people having data or having access to data in their home, any special considerations there?
Yes, the Data Protection Commission has issued guidance on that, and it's really important that employers guide their employees in that regard, particularly where they are dealing with confidential data, to protect the employer's data and perhaps client data or customer data as well, in terms of the safety of their computers, and that their computers are kept private and for their use only, and in terms of their home space, if there are any hard copies of documents, that they would also be kept safe and secure, is vitally important for employers to have regard to that with employees working from home.
Trina, lots of food for thought there for people listening. As I said at the beginning, we could probably spend hours on any one of those subjects. Thank you so much for joining us today. It'd be great to get you back on at some other time, and maybe we can deep dive on one of those.
Absolutely. Thanks, Declan.
No problem. And Trina, if someone wants to get in contact, wants to discuss some of this stuff in more detail, needs some legal advice around it, how can they contact you?
Absolutely. I'm at tsugru@algoodbody.com, and also on our In Algo Body website, we have a COVID-19 hub where there's a lot of information on COVID-19, not just employment law, but other areas as well. And they're welcome to take a look at that.
Fantastic. And we'll link all of that below the podcast for anyone listening.
Perfect.
To Trina Sugru, A&L Good Body. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie.